Welcome to,
or welcome back to, Dark Room Reviews.
My name is Ginger.
And I'm Matt.
This week's episode, we're going to continue our review of the Conjuring universe. We're going to look at a strange case from the UK. Not real life, though. COVID's still a thing. We can't travel.
Yeah.
Cries. This is the real life UK case about the subject of this week's movie.
The Conjuring 2.
Time to compare the real case and review the Conjuring Universe film.
So let's dive right in.
Right, you might be asking, who are we? Or you're probably not, because you listen to us all the time, right? So you already know.
You hit that subscribe button. Yeah. Is that a YouTube channel? What are we doing?
No, you can be.
Oh, yeah, you can subscribe to a podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Hit that like button.
There's no like button. Well, now you're confusing it.
Give us a 5-star Uber rating.
There we go.
Perfect.
I'm Ginger. I'm the one who, you know, actually likes movies and actively seeks out these types of things.
What? Why are you looking at me like that?
That's just a little bit of shade coming your way.
Oh, I thought it was just because the window was open. That's why it was cold.
Yeah, so I'm the one who is constantly seeking out these new horror movies. I love to watch them. I love to review them. I don't always love them, though, and I'm always in search for that extra special horror movie. Actually, I will say that very recently, I found one that I thought was pretty good in comparison. We can talk about that new one.
Is it the new one we watched?
Yeah, the new one we watched.
Yeah, we can talk about that. It's too real, though. That's how it gets, yeah.
I think that's why it got me.
I still need to get into some of the other ones. We'll talk about that later. But as you know, I'm the film music expert who worked on some film series, and I hate everything. I hate everything. Don't even try me.
I wouldn't say you hate everything, but you're definitely meh about most things.
I'm too busy pulling apart the technical aspects of it for me to really enjoy almost any movie.
Yep.
Especially horror ones, because they're harder to do right. That's kind of why we do this, so you guys can hear us talk about them, so you don't have to waste your time.
Yeah.
And you get to hear us bicker about things.
Exactly.
It's great.
Right.
So I guess that means the great debate lives on. So, The Conjuring 2, off to the UK, are we? Mm-hmm. This movie was released in 2016, directed by James Wan himself, who he was the same director for the original Conjuring movie. Mm-hmm. You can tell that we like this one a bit better. Probably that had something to do with it.
Yeah.
This also stars our classic original cast members.
Our absolute favorites. They make an appearance yet again.
Yeah, we have Vera Farmiga as Lorraine Warren, Patrick Wilson as Ed Warren, and now we have the haunted family that are the, you know, subjects of this movie.
Yeah, the family in question, if you will.
Yes. Frances O'Connor as Peggy Hodgson. That's actually, she's most notably in Mansfield Park, Bedazzled AI, The Importance of Being Earnest, and Mr. Selfridge, right?
Yeah, she was in the Mr. Selfridge series. She played the wife in that series. Yeah. You know what? It was a short-run series. It was actually pretty good.
Yeah, and she's also done a whole bunch of other random TV stuff that I've never even heard of. All over the place.
Just a slew of TV shows. Like, she's a very accomplished actress for sure. And shout out to my 90s kids, if you'll remember Bedazzled. It was terrible. She plays the girl that Brendan Fraser is constantly trying to go after. Yeah, that's her.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Now she's just poor in the UK.
Yes.
Trying to raise like 8 kids.
Right.
It's like 5. I don't know. Next, we have Madison Wolf as Janet Hodgson. Mm-hmm. Janet will be kind of a key character for this movie.
Yeah.
Lauren Esposito as Margaret Hodgson. Benjamin Haig as Billy Hodgson. Patrick McCauley as Johnny Hodgson. That is the whole family.
Yes.
So there's a lot of them.
Yes.
They all kind of have different roles in the movie. A lot of it does focus around Janet and a little bit with Margaret and Johnny. There's kind of, that's kind of it. But everyone's still kind of tied in.
Yeah.
There are a few other characters that kind of make an appearance. Like, they do have another investigator that comes by and like a social worker and some TV reporters. But we're just going to basically focused on these two sections, the Warrens and the Hodgson family, because that's kind of really what this whole movie is based around.
Yeah.
As well, just a quick little aside, they did change the actor or actress for Valak / Bathsheba, who is the creepy nun person.
Yeah, creepy nun demon.
And that is Bonnie Ahrens, who plays Valak in this movie, as well as in The Nun.
The Nun.
Which we'll get up to that movie soon.
Yeah, that'll be happening at some point here.
So this episode, we're going to kind of continue with our Conjuring theme, of course. And we're also going to give you an idea where we are, what's going on, as well as compare this one to the original story. As you know from our last episode, Annabelle did not leave us with the great story that we were hoping it was going to.
No.
This one does change a little bit. We'll give you kind of what really happened, what didn't really happen, and where they kind of have some Hollywood movie magic.
So this one, right off the bat, it does stick way more closely to the actual story, and I do think that that is certainly working in its favor.
Yes.
Like, when you go and read about the Enfield case, that's actually
what it's called.
They did a pretty good job. There were a lot of the key highlights they certainly got in the movie.
Yep, and thankfully, because it was so popular at the time, in real life, this case was actually documented and filmed on TV, and there were things and tapes and pictures, all the above things.
It's supposed to be most notably the most documented
paranormal investigation
thing. Yeah.
We'll get into some of the flaws and some of the things that may or may not be true about it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But also, timeline. Ginger, where are we?
Right. So, this is the third movie in release order. And in the year that it actually took place, we're now in the, mid-70s?
Mid-late 70s.
1977. So, that's where we are. So, in terms of their whole...
In terms of what we've reviewed so far, Annabelle has happened first. Then The Conjuring, the original Conjuring, after it.
Technically, though, The Nun happens first in the storyline.
Yes.
It's just that The Nun doesn't get released until last.
Later.
But quite exactly, if you're going by the strict years that they're talking about in the movies. So first it's The Nun, then it's Annabelle Creation, then it's Annabelle, then The Conjuring, then Annabelle comes home.
The Curse of La Llorona, The Conjuring 2, which is where we are here, and then the next one coming up, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It.
Yeah.
So we're kind of towards the end of the Warrens kind of most notable cases. I think they did a few that aren't really featured in the Conjuring universe.
Yeah, and if you're going by, strict chronological timeline, not movie release date, this is actually, the last one that we have in the timeline quote.
Yes.
Because Matt is saying, that new one is set to release June 2021. We'll see if that gets released on time.
Well, it might in the States. I don't know what the vaccine rollout in Canada. It might be released, but we may not be able to go to a theater still. # two more weeks of Toronto stay at home order.
Yeah.
Thrilled about it.
Great.
Hey, more time for podcasts.
Yeah. Silver lining.
Yeah. So essentially we're at kind of the end of the quote real timeline. However, in terms of release date, we're only the third movie in. So,
and it also does help that we are getting into, I understand that 1977 is still a long time ago, but also it is vastly different technology wise. So that could also be some of the reason as to why
it was so documented
and
everything.
Things are more documented. Maybe they're starting to pay more attention to we have video cameras, we have recording, we have audio recording. Let's utilize this.
I do like that they poke fun of that in the movie. I'll get to that scene, but there's a scene where Patrick Wilson, who's playing Ed Warren, comes in and they bring this giant camera, and he makes it kind of oh man, they're so small these days.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
the size of his shoulders. And
yeah.
Oh right, this was small for the 70s.
Exactly.
Anyways.
It was cute. It was a cute moment.
It's cute. They have some cute things in here with the dialogue and still trying to make it, a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
But let's start right at the beginning.
So if we're starting at the beginning, this opens with the Amityville case, and it opens with Lorraine narrating kind of what's going on. And the cool thing for me, and this is a personal note, is that Amityville is one of the first horror movies I ever saw. The original, not any of the remakes. And it was actually one of the movies that really stuck with me. I found it very creepy when I first watched it. And I found the story of it really creepy. And I read the book at some point, again, probably when I was way too young to read the book, And I was like, this, I remember when I was reading the book, I was like, wait a second, this was based on a true story? I was like, that is terrifying. And it is, like, the story of Amityville is quite gripping, you know, when you read it. And I love that this movie opens with that scene.
I like how James Wan takes the Warren stories and kind of uses it to kind of almost plot you into their life.
Yes.
They did this in The Conjuring 2 where they're, not Conjuring 2 as in the movie, we're doing Conjuring as well as in the first one.
Yes.
You gotta clarify that.
Yeah.
They do that in the original Conjuring.
Yeah.
With the scene at the university where you kind of get to see their inside life. And it really makes it seem more real, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Even though the whole sequence is, you know, fake, you know it's a movie, and even still, that you can probably guess, this is a whole, we launch into a medium scene with Lorraine where she's doing a seance in the home. And I even think, like, Lorraine Warren has agreed that it's not as necessarily vivid or clear as the way this is being portrayed.
The real Lorraine Warren, like, before she passed away, had been pretty explicit that, like, the way that the seances and her visions are portrayed in the movies certainly isn't how she even says they happen in real life. She says they're more, she had said that they were more of, like, flashes and, like, almost suggestion emotions, and emotion versus, like...
Now, that also leads like into some other issues in terms of her legitimacy.
Yeah.
However, and she even said that the movie, she's like, as Hollywood as they are, she still supports the movies because of the message that's being portrayed of be careful around things you don't know, leave it to professionals, seek help when you need to.
Yeah.
Now, again, we'll get into this a bit later, but there's been a lot of debate around some of their more notable cases and how legit they are.
I thought it was really interesting, this is a bit of a sidetrack, but her comment on how movie creators created the look for Valak or that Bathsheba, demon.
Whatever they're calling them in the different movies.
So I do like her thoughts on that, in that she had, when she actually saw the thing put to screen, she was like, wow, that's actually really close to how I picture it.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really interesting comment from her, just comment of note, just saying, like, I guess how they actually got it was that she sat down with, you know, one of those...
Yeah, with, like, a composite artist.
Yeah, a composite artist, and put together this drawing. That's how they came up with it. And that's fairly... I don't know, it's...
Again, the
pretty creepy image.
The reality of it.
Whether or not you believe that that is actually how she sees it, it's interesting to note of how they got the aesthetic for that character.
And again, whether you believe 100%, 50%, 0% of what's happening, but the fact that someone was able to get this image from someone was interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I do like this opening sequence here with the whole medium out-of-body experience. Yeah. I do like some of the effects they used for some of the lighting and especially the mirror effect. So we see Lorraine walking through the Amityville house and you can see she's separated from her body. That's kind of the effect they're going for.
Yeah, yeah.
And she is now through the eyes of the killer.
Yes.
So she is going through the murders, almost like experiencing it. And it's really cool because there's actually a mirror in one of the scenes where she turns the room and you can see in the reflection that she's pretending to hold a gun, but it's visible in the mirror, but she's now someone else in the mirror. I think it's a cool effect, and I think that really gets, you know, sets the tone for kind of what's about to happen.
It certainly got me on the creepy scale, because whether or not you believe she actually had this experience or not,
we can all definitively say that this thing did happen.
That man murdered his family.
Yeah,
that kid, he murdered his parents. Excuse me, and his younger siblings.
Yeah.
You know, that was a real murder that took place. And what I think is so well done about that is that there's not a whole lot of, you know, Hollywoodness of those scenes. And what I mean by that is there's not a whole lot of need for special effects. It's literally just Lorraine as the point of view of the killer.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And that's kind of what's happening.
It's a very easy thing for you to imagine as the audience viewer. You're not really suspending a whole lot of belief, even though you are in the sense that you're...
You may not agree that Lorraine saw it this way.
Yeah, has those types of visions, I suppose.
The fact that they're able to show you that and, you know, make you believe that that's happening.
Yeah.
It really is a cool sense of how they're going to set
it. I think it's a good opening scene, and I think it's a somewhat believable open scene if you're talking about a horror movie. In a movie where, well, in a whole world where things are very, like, fiction-based.
Yeah, and compared to Annabelle, I like how this one does centralize around, I'll air quote this, real facts or facts that are available. And that's what I liked about The Conjuring is that it really tried to focus on events that were tangible.
Yes.
And that's kind of what they're doing here.
Those events are questionable, and and that's fair. Matt and I think that too. But
The fact that they were documented and that, at least to some extent, this is what someone experienced.
Well, it feels more like storytelling now.
Yes.
Now it feels more like storytelling, not just like complete fabrication, which is what Annabelle was. And that's what is so disappointing about Annabelle, is that it's just not that well done, quite frankly.
So now the only thing I don't love about this scene is the kind of Valak introduction where she has the vision of Ed.
Yeah.
I know that's kind of been loosely brought up about Ed Warren's death.
She had visions of him dying.
Yep.
In a violent way associated with this demon, apparently.
I just think that this almost took it to Hollywood.
It's way too Hollywood.
It's like lured into the basement and then the nun is there and
she like skewers him with a wooden spike
or something. I don't know what it
it's
is.
It's like a wooden stick. I don't know.
And that's when the seance breaks and we kind of get introduced to, you know, the typewriter Star Wars-esque type of like reading what the story is.
A little technical note. I really love the, okay, this is the weirdest thing, but I like this in both The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2. Mm-hmm. I love the title sequence.
I like the typewriter almost.
Not just the typewriter, not just the words, the actual title of the movie when it comes up and it's like The Conjuring and they use that, they actually have like a theme music for it.
Yeah,
it's
that
the
kind
same
of
in Conjuring
score,
1
yeah.
and as it is in Conjuring 2.
Yep.
I don't know what it is about that, but I usually don't really care for most horror movie
scores almost.
Scores or title screens. I just find them to be usually super cheesy or not noticeable. They're just nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I find they almost present it like a documentary.
It's presented like a documentary. This reminds me a lot of The Exorcist. I think that's part of why it just has that, I don't know, it just has that look.
Yeah.
It's well done. Maybe we see if we can find
Get the clip in here for you guys, that opening sequence.
Mm-hmm.
So now we jump over to England. Just a quick jump over the pond. Yeah. And we are in Enfield, which is a suburb in the greater London area.
Mm-hmm.
We know that it's in London because The Clash.
Yeah. London's calling is playing, so we know that we're definitely in England.
Yes. And we kind of come up onto a British school, and we finally meet Janet, one of the daughters.
Yes.
I think she's the middle daughter of the...
She's the middle daughter.
Yeah, of the family.
Janet is in the process of getting in trouble at school. She has a little friend who is smoking a cigarette.
She's
and
a
then
bit
they
of a
both
shit.
Get Yeah, a little shit. And way too young to be smoking.
Well, they're British,
smoking.
But...
No, literally nobody should be smoking, but okay, it's fine. It's the 1970s, so people smoked. It was more common. But, shoot, they are like...
I would say
like
that they were like...
12 or 13. Yeah. They're young. Little kids.
Like tweens or teens at best.
I think teens at best, but I think tweens is more appropriate.
Yeah.
Janet and her little friend, they're getting caught. So basically the little
Janet
friend...
Janet doesn't want to smoke.
Yeah,
and the friend's like, oh, just hold it for
like,
me.
Hold
I'm going
to
go to my bag. And of course, that's when the teacher comes out.
Yeah.
That's when Janet takes the blame for smoking at school.
Yeah, so Janet gets in trouble. And so that's kind of thing. So she's kind of going home knowing that she's going to get in shit from the mom. And the mom is under a lot of stress. You can tell. I love the acting. The mom looks like frazzled. That's the actress Frances O'Connor that we were talking about. She looks frazzled and stressed out. And their
house is in disrepair.
Well, their flat is a crap hole.
Well, then you find out. So the siblings meet after school. They all come home together. You kind of get to know who's who.
Yeah.
And immediately you're jumped into mother on the phone, dealing with bills. You can tell that they're in community housing.
Yes.
Essentially, they're on, like, UK subsidized housing because the parents had separated. Mother's trying to do it all on her own. And it's, like, at best, like, a 3-bedroom flat with tiny bedrooms, like anything in London.
Yeah.
And there's like 8,000 kids. What is it with all these like haunting stories and they all have like 8,000 kids?
Well, I think what you're tapping into is that, you know, it was more common to have more kids in that time frame.
50s, yeah.
60s, 70s, right? This is pretty typical. Whereas like as the decades go on and on, it's way more common now. You know, at one point it was like, oh, to have 2 kids is common. And then it was like to have 1 kid is common. And now it's like, well, Our generation, maybe you have a cat. Our generation is.
Hey, maybe George will make an appearance on this podcast too.
Yeah,
you never know.
Listen closely. He usually meows and interrupts at some point, and currently he is actively cleaning his paws. So shout out for the people who might be able to hear that.
Well, he's behind the mic. Thank you, Cartier Mics.
Yeah. So, we can see, like we said, that like this poor family, the Hodgson family, is kind of a hot mess. They're broke.
I mean, same.
But, you know, can relate.
Thank you, government money.
Woo woo.
So now we start getting into the fun haunting thing. So the shit friend of Janet's has kind of convinced her that they're going to do like a Ouija board type of thing. Sorry,
what is
every
it
time.
With...
Well, every before we ended up the, like, the Ouija boards, I always think of the really bad YouTube video where the person's like commenting on the bad spelling of like.
Quidja board.
A Luigi board. We're going to insert it here for you guys.
Nailed it. Luigi board? The Luigi board? Making a Luigi board? Have you played the Luigi board? Can you burn a Luigi board? What is a Luigi board? My friends did a Luigi board? And it mentioned me? How do Luigi boards work? Are Luigi boards dangerous if you ask something about ghosts? What's up with the Luigi board game? Is it creepy or what? Is it possible to die for playing this game?
It's hilarious.
Oh, help Quidja! Do Quidja boards actually work?
So, okay, but what is it with people always busting out the Ouija board? I owned one. Did you ever own one? Did you own a Ouija board?
No, I didn't. I don't think so.
Well, anyway, I owned one. And
how many times were you haunted?
We weren't necessarily haunted, but the thing is, like, kind of creepy. Like, you know, me and my best friend, we actively used it a couple of times.
Used a Luigi board?
And we freaked ourselves out, and then we didn't use it for a long time. And I don't even know where it went, actually. I lost it in all the moves.
See? The ghost took it.
Yeah, that's it. Logical. That's the only logical conclusion there.
Right? Well, and of course, so now in the movie, Janet is trying the Ouija board, the Quidja board.
The Quidja board, yeah.
Yep. And, of course, things start happening that night.
Yeah. Cue nighttime haunting.
Yes. Insert scene.
Insert haunting here.
Now, I do like how in both The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2, they do slowly ramp up the hauntings. And I feel like that was the problem with Annabelle.
Yeah, they did.
Is it was like, break in, this is creepy, that is creepy. Like, they kind of led you on so much with how creepy it was going to be, but then nothing was really living up to what they were presenting.
Well, and Annabelle, we said it so much when we did that review that they show you so much and then it ruins it. Yeah. Like, the way to make something scary, like, note for any movie producers out there listening, the way to make something scary is to build it up really slowly, show the audience things very, very little, let their imagination get the better of them.
Yeah.
Let people's imagination run wild. What somebody can imagine is personal, and so therefore it's way scarier to them versus whatever a Hollywood movie can show you. It's always
even with the best makeup, use shadows, use figures.
Yes,
those
use suggestions.
Always creepier.
We're not saying you have to show nothing. We're not saying you have to be Blair Witch style about it and show absolutely nothing, but just show hints of things and suggestion, because it's just so much better than revealing all this stuff. Then you're like, oh, that's what it looks like. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And on the side of that, that kind of relates into the new horror movie we saw with the Zoom calls.
So good. I think, now, do we want to talk about it now or do we want to talk about the end? Let's talk about it at the end.
We'll talk about the end because we'll do kind of just a quick thing about that.
Yeah.
Because it kind of ties in with a few other movies that I think kind of fall into this category, but we'll finish this first
for sure.
And then we'll do that one. So now we have just normal nighttime haunting stuff. I believe that she was just kind of getting, like, feeling things in the bed. She was kind of getting up in the middle of the night, hearing some sounds, right?
Well, and so Janet was, if I'm not mistaken, Janet was almost like having a conversation in her sleep. And the older sister was watching Janet have this conversation with basically nobody.
Yeah.
And that was really well done. It gave me reminiscent vibes of the original Conjuring in that the sister is watching the other sister and she can't see a ghost or a being or a something, right?
Yeah,
she's
just literally just weird things happening.
Yeah, she's literally just watching her sister, like, talk to nobody. And yep. that is creepy in and of itself. Like, yeah. I think they set the mood really nice with that first haunting. It's yeah. not over the top. It's well done.
So after this haunting, first haunting scene, don't worry, there'll be many more.
Yeah.
We actually go back to Ed and Lorraine. And yep. this is the one thing I like about this movie, too, is it doesn't just focus on the Enfield case entirely.
Yeah.
We start this with the actual talk show mm-hmm. with Ed and Lorraine Warren, which they did do talk shows in yep. university tours. That is what they used to do.
Yeah.
And this one is particularly interesting because they, even in the movie, they're almost showing the doubt that people had about them.
Yes.
So in this TV talk show, you can see that they actually brought in the Warrens and another scientist, quote, mm-hmm. about kind of their investigations and if they're true, if they're not, can people believe them? Are they reliable?
Yeah.
And you can see that the Warrens are getting a little worked up because they're frustrated that no one's believing them.
Yeah.
And the scientist is kind of shooting them down, be like, well, you don't really have any hard evidence. You don't really have this.
Yep.
All these things can be linked to something else. Mm-hmm. And the Warrens are basically like, yeah, you weren't there.
Yeah.
We documented it and they're kind of trying poking holes at it. To be fair, this is also our argument too of some of the documentation that they have as, quote, proof is maybe not the most reliable, and if we had the technology we do now, maybe there may be other explanations for it.
Yeah.
But we'll digress and continue with on that later. But I do like that they showed that side of the Warrens of, like...
Yeah.
And they did that in The Conjuring, the first Conjuring as well, where they're in the... doing their university presentation, and they're like, what do people like to call you? Mm-hmm. Kooks, wackos, crazies.
Yeah. I think they were pretty well aware that not everybody thought that they were telling the truth or thought that they were legit. And at the end of the day, whether or not they believed that, that's like, it's very hard to start proving that type of thing, right? Yeah. It's okay. I am going to sidetrack this conversation a little bit. But this is almost like trying to convince someone of something, even when it's real, but if they don't understand it, it can be extremely difficult. Now, it's not the same analogy, but recently we've gone down the rabbit hole of flat earthers. Do yourself a favor and check this wacko group out.
Oh, man.
They are nuts.
This is... similar idea. I get where you're going here, where it's like you can tell them all the facts that are there, but until they yeah. have come to that conclusion themselves.
Yeah.
And the Warrens may have been victim to this. They may have been, yeah. you know, confirmation biasing all their information and yes. only collecting information that proved their point.
Yeah.
While not necessarily taking in every single bit exactly. of evidence that came into them.
But I do think of... Now, I don't really... I have a feeling that I don't think the Warrens were on the same track as flat earthers, but I do think they're similar in the sense that, like, a flat earther thinks that they are right. I don't think they're trying to dupe you. I think they just legitimately think that they're correct in their assumptions.
Yep.
Right?
And I think the difference, too, is for the time, the information they had available to them, that was the only logical answer.
Yes.
And in their beliefs and everything like that, that was what they perceived to be real.
Yeah.
Now, the thing where I find is it personally is a little bit creepier are the things that you don't necessarily have an answer for.
Yeah.
You necessarily, I maybe won't get on board with 100% of, you know, the exorcism fixed everything.
No.
But the idea of what really happened, did things really move? How yeah. did those things happen in this situation? So even relating to the Enfield case, did Janet really...
Yeah.
levitate? Was she really conjuring up anything? Was yeah. it all fake? I find that
there's a really cool, we'll get to it, but there is a really cool piece of information that the police officer who was first called to the scene of the Enfield case before the Warrens got involved, before any of that stuff was kind of like sought after,
mm-hmm.
this police officer still goes on record basically saying
not
what
even on
she
record,
saw
she had a signed affidavit.
Signed affidavit, like she's like, I saw what I saw, and I still don't have a thing to explain it. She's like, I can't say that it's paranormal, I don't really know that, but I can at least tell you what I witnessed. And I do like accounts like that. I think that's really interesting.
So, yeah, and that's what I find interesting, too, is, like, going into the details and what's going to fix this and what the Warrens did as helpful, not necessarily my biggest thing, saying, like, yes, that is for sure what happened, but the idea of we don't know what happened, to what extent, and that, at least at the end of the day, there was enough information there to make someone think that that was real.
To at least question it. It's,
And that's, I find, the creepier part, is, like, how bad did it get?
Yes.
And how badly was it being in that environment? And we'll get into exactly kind of what's been going on here. So kind of starting back up with what had started going on, there's like a nighttime routine with one of the younger kids with the Crooked Man. That is the creepiest fucking game ever. It's like a weird, like you look through it and it spins and it's supposed to be this like really tall, lanky guy like walking down and you kind of move the pictures on the inside.
He looked like an old-timey Slender Man.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Holding the world's like creepiest umbrella.
Yeah.
The most disheveled umbrella, and it was like little, like frayed. Anyways.
Yeah, yeah.
And it had the creepiest songs like, this is a crooked man who lives in a crooked house.
Yeah, and he lives, like, he does crooked things, lives in the crooked world, and you're like, oh, okay, so that's just pure terror.
Yep, and we'll find the song here. Now, I wouldn't want to go to Crooked Town, but apparently this kid does.
Loves it.
Loves the game.
Yeah.
And there's like a toy fire truck and everything like that. So now we start getting more of the talking scenes. Janet's being talking in bed. And again, I always find it weird that sleepwalking is a common theme.
Yeah.
Don't know if that's a happy coincidence. Maybe they just don't know enough about sleepwalking.
Yeah, I mean, that could be something. Sorry. Like,
I just remembered all the sleepwalking TikToks. They're hilarious. There's like one TikTok / like YouTuber, I forget her name, but
she a stand-up comedian?
I think she's a stand-up comedian. She's done like the tie-dye videos. She does like a lot of even like beauty tutorials.
Yeah.
She's done most recently posted sleepwalking videos on her TikTok.
She's a severe sleepwalker.
And she can actually kind of put it on herself with like cheese and chocolate.
Yeah, if she eats the wrong thing before bed and gets too hot, like she
mean, I appreciate that she puts them out there, because I know some of the things that have happened to her are embarrassing. Like, she's woken up naked in a hotel without her room key.
It's so funny.
Like, my favorite one is her bringing drinks from the kitchen, super pumped about it, and like throws them out onto the lawn.
Yeah, onto a snow-covered lawn. She's like feeding the lawn, and then there's a guy that walking by the house. And they've got video cameras set up to like catch all this stuff. My favorite one is the one where she farts really loudly. Yeah, he's
like, who?
And she turns around, she's like, who? And I'm like, oh man, it is hilarious.
If you need a good laugh after watching this horror movie, check those sleepwalking TikToks out.
Right.
But I'm always I'm always weirded out by how like sleepwalking ends up being in there.
Because you are onto something there. I do wonder if like, hey, it could just be something weird that's happening in our brains. In people's brains who sleepwalk. And yeah, I mean, there could be a whole area that's just not studied about what is legitimately scientifically happening during the sleepwalking event, right?
Now, do I necessarily agree 100% with the Warrens that they are closer to communicating with the paranormal?
No, I don't know if I can say that. I don't know if I can
definitively say that.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about sleepwalking, but I do find it odd
that
a lot of these, quote, paranormal cases have someone that has at least some level of sleepwalking.
Right.
Or proceeds to develop a level of sleepwalking.
Yes.
So, interesting side note there. And then we also have some of the fire truck toys that's being turned on in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
The last thing we have in this night haunting scene is Janet is in the chair that's in their living room. Now, this is a weird coincidence, and this has been up for debate for a while, but we'll get back to the chair. But there's a weird coincidence about this chair that has been up for debate basically since this case had taken place.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that. So now we're into the next day, and it's raining, because, you know, it's England. London.
Because London.
If you ever go to London, it sucks. I was in London 3 years ago today.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, of course it was raining. I mean, I looked at the pictures.
Yeah.
But February in London. But I'm just like, oh, can I go back to London? Can I just go somewhere?
Right.
Other than the living room? Anyways.
And I was in Scotland, like, 6 years ago.
Yeah, you did your big Scotland trip.
Yeah.
But We'll get there eventually. But now we have kind of some interesting things, and we get to kind of unravel what's been going on history-wise in the house. Mm-hmm. So Janet's not feeling well. She stays home. Or it's a weekend. I can't remember which one. She wasn't feeling well. Yes. So she's at home, and of course the mom's out working, so she's at home by herself, and it's raining, and the TV's kind of shitting out.
Yeah.
It's kind of flickering. It's, you know, rabbit-ear TV, because the 70s. Yeah. And basically some stuff starts happening. This, I don't know if it's as true, but I do remember they had some issues with this, with things going missing, particularly with the TV remote.
Yep.
So the remote would be missing. Again, how paranormal is that? I lose the remote like 3 times an hour.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's like a ghost stealing your remote.
Yeah.
It could just be just as simple as like, you're forgetful and you put your remote in places and you don't remember where you put them.
Yeah, or the couch eats it. That's normally what happens to me.
It's also a thing.
The cool thing about this scene is the TV kind of blacks out and you can see a reflection of someone sitting in the chair behind the couch where Janet's sitting. And you can see, again, this is a little Hollywood movie magic. The remote is floating in air, and then when she turns around, it drops.
Mm-hmm.
As if the guy in the reflection was holding the remote, and then when she turns, there's no one in the chair, and it falls to the ground.
I really like that scene.
It's a cool effect.
I thought it was really good. It wasn't too much. It wasn't too over the top.
But again, they don't show you too much. You can see the reflection. You know it's someone, like a person.
Yeah, but because you're not getting that full frontal view of it, you're getting the in the reflection of the glass of the TV.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool, because it was freaky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that scene. It kind of really sets it off for like, oh shit, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
So now we jump back to the Warrens. And this is the only thing I don't love about this movie.
Yeah.
The kind of weird tidbit add-ins with the Warrens that don't necessarily add anything to the movie itself, but are realistically only there potentially for a through line.
Yeah.
Not the biggest fans of that.
Yeah, the painting part.
The whole painting scene and the Valak kind of targeting Lorraine. Because that realistically didn't happen in the way that Lorraine has described it.
Yeah, like the real Lorraine Warren has been actually pretty, she had been before she passed away, she was pretty forthcoming with the fact that she felt like this demon was approaching her in the sense that cases kept getting dropped on their laps that were connected to this type of demon. But not in the sense that the demon was, like, physically coming after them the way that they make it appear in the movies.
Yeah, and I remember she mentioned that she would have recurring visions about this demon.
Yes.
But was never in a dangerous situation.
Yeah, was never in, like, a full contact type of situation. Yeah. And they really do play up that in these movies.
And I don't necessarily like how it doesn't really add to the original story. It's almost really just there for the purpose of a through line.
Yeah.
Because that does become important for La Llorona and The Nun and a lot of the other kind of prequel after the fact movies.
Yeah.
So in this part, Ed's painting basically The Nun. And they have a big conversation about what Lorraine saw and all these things. And it's just kind of like recapping what we already know, but she's just explaining it to Ed. And I do understand part of that is true. They did have a bit of disagreements on how many cases they should be taking because Lorraine had basically every time she's explained it as every time she does some of these cases, she gets worn away by it.
Yeah.
Kind of a piece of her energy, soul, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
suffers from going through these seances and these events and seeing people in this type of distress.
Yes.
So it's kind of a more of a heartwarming scene of like Ed being like, oh, you need to trust us. It's going to be okay. God put us together for a reason.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been their overarching thing has been like, we wouldn't be here doing our thing if it wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah.
Now, I do think they believe that. I think it's a nice tidbit to add to the movie, but the kind of whole dramatic scenes with Valak the Nun and some of the other painting stuff, I don't really care for because it just is there to serve a through point.
Now, I do think that, like, just from a movie making perspective, I do think that the scenes with the picture, like the painted picture turning into the real nun or the suggestion that it's turning into
later,
the real nun,
it's good, yeah.
Later is actually a good effect. Like,
it's a good effect. I don't like it in terms of the storytelling.
And it didn't happen. And Lorraine Warren had said like that had never happened. But like, I think that just from a movie standpoint,
yep.
I liked it. I thought it was like a good creepy scene.
It's a good effect, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, after this scene, we kind of jump back because they kind of end the scene with, you know, we're here for a reason type of thing. Mm-hmm. And now we're back in England. So you kind of know, oh, that's kind of the tie-in. They're going to, you know, they went through one case. They're going to get together and they're going to help this family. And I'll get back to that in a little bit because the Warrens actually kind of invited themselves. It's kind of funny in real life.
Yeah.
But now we're back in rainy England because obviously.
Obviously.
And we have more nighttime hauntings.
Yeah.
Time for more haunting stuff. So Janet is continuing to sleepwalk in the middle of the night. She keeps going back to this chair. And to kind of prevent her from sleepwalking, she's actually now like tied herself to the bed. That was a real thing that she did.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of neat how when we were reading about the real case.
Yeah.
That was legitimately something that Janet did because she was afraid of all the sleepwalking that she was doing.
Yeah.
Getting her into these like really scary positions.
Mm-hmm. So now we see the first chair moving around and they try to barricade the room, essentially. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work and then the bed starts shaking. That's a good effect. I like that one there.
I liked it.
And, you know, that's normal.
Yeah, totally normal.
Normal night. You know. And the mother now finds the Ouija board.
Mm-hmm. The board. Makeshift Ouija board.
Yeah.
It is like...
It is a makeshift. They kind of did homemade with cutting out letters and shit. Mm-hmm. And...
So she tears it up.
Now, this is apparently a real account, according to Patty, what happened. Peggy? Did I say Patty?
It's Peggy.
Peggy. My apologies. Upon exiting the room, she sees the dresser.
Yes.
Go right into the door.
Yes. Now.
That is apparently, according to them, a real account that happened to them.
Yeah.
I can't say it didn't happen. I can dispute the legitimacy of it, but I wasn't there.
No. We weren't there. You cannot say whether it did or didn't happen. The likelihood of it happening is pretty slim.
Yep.
But I will say that if that did happen like that, that would be really, really fucking creepy.
Ghosts, no ghosts. It was a brief typhoon that was isolated to the dresser. I don't care what it'd be. It would be fucking creepy.
Yeah.
And that's where I think this stuff kind of gets to me.
That's the point that we're trying to make. We're not necessarily saying, like, definitively that it is or is not a haunting, quote unquote. It's that if I imagine that if this was happening to me and I had no way to physically explain it with the laws of nature and physics that we currently know, I would be freaked out. That makes you feel fear in a very logical way. That would be like if right now, you know, our cat started floating off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That would be really creepy.
Yeah.
Because that is not a thing that we know to be possible.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so creepy. Now, there's the other social aspect of it that you don't know if these things are really true accounts. Because it can just be people trying to con you and trying to get, you know, attention and money. And I get that too. I'm just saying that if I was to put myself in that perspective.
Yeah. Like the stuff that you don't know, that you can't explain.
The unknown is actually scary.
Yeah. And that's kind of what gets us about these cases. Not necessarily exactly the Warrens' account entirely.
No, it's because they certainly have some skin in that game, right? Like, they certainly have reason to potentially lie about it.
Yeah.
Or embellish, even. And just like this family has reason to lie or embellish about it. Mm-hmm. What I find interesting is when people from outside of the situation start kind of corroborating that evidence or the account of it. That's what's so fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm. So now we get to the cops. So after this event happened, good on the family. They freaked out and they went out to the neighbor's house.
Mm-hmm.
And they had called the police just to make sure because they were legitimately thinking that there was someone in their house.
Yeah.
Now this is the interesting thing because the family themselves got a lot of flack for basically doing, they were almost kind of, not really put down, but were shamed for basically scamming everyone and putting this on TV and forcing their kids to do all these things that were not true.
Right.
They kind of got put into the box of when things weren't really, you know, essentially when they couldn't make someone float by the paranormal, they were deemed that they were lying.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things where I'm like, I understand that that is something that you shouldn't do. You shouldn't put your kids on TV and tell them to lie and just to parade a paranormal story.
Yeah.
But also, there are so many other details about this where I'm like, well, then why did they go through the hassle of calling the cops? Were the cops in on it? This is then becoming so elaborate. And that's the thing I don't necessarily agree with the Warrens is...
Yeah.
Could it have been a big elaborate scam?
Maybe.
But I find there's too many holes to...
So many variables in it. There's so many people, so many players in it that you're like... Really, all these people got together?
Just like the flat earthers. Like, it's according to them, the flat earth is a whole conspiracy. Like, we're being told that it's round by a conspiracy by the government. Like, do you know how many people they'd have to shut up?
Yeah, I mean...
It's kind of a similar thing. Like, how many loose ends would they have to convince, bribe, extort for them to have this story be true?
Yes.
Same thing with this. Like, why would you go through the effort of getting the cops involved? Because you're legit... Like, they responded to what they assumed was a home invasion.
Yeah.
And then you get a, like, again, then they had to bribe the cop. I don't know. The UK cops are boring and dull. Like, I don't think they would take bribery too well.
Right.
But, and then you actually get a cop to get a signed affidavit. So when the cops come in this scene, they do a search of the house. They can't find anything.
Yep.
And similar to what happened in the movie, they're just kind of standing. And according to the police officer, they were standing and they saw a chair move into the dining room by at least 4 feet.
Yeah.
Not inches.
Yeah, 4 feet.
She signed that it was 4 feet.
Yep.
So... I don't know about you. That's a bit of a hard one to
dispute,
especially legally, too.
Yeah, it's a hard one to debunk, just because...
Again, it could have been a fake report, but then I also argue, how many loose ends are you going to tie up here for an elaborate stunt?
And also, what's the motive? Like, usually the simplest explanation has to be, like, kind of the right one.
Yeah.
And the thing is that the cop would have no motive... to fabricate that type of story, to what end?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. Like, to what end? There's no financial gain for a cop.
No, you don't get
stuff.
Well, and you don't get stuff from TV.
Like. No. Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, it's just, and that was it. Like, this female cop, she never profited off this story. She never
rescinded her affidavit, even after the fact, when
this
movie came out.
No, and actually, she's been asked, like, when the movie came out, she was still alive, in 2016.
Yeah.
They asked her again about her thoughts, and she was like, yep. She's like, I saw that. I saw that, and I've still never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then they kind of refer them to maybe some church help. Maybe they can go there. I find it a little odd. I don't know how this happened in real life, but in the movie it seems kind of odd that they're like, oh, yeah, you might want to just go to the church about that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's almost like, you know, let me go to my little conjuring nook or my... like, witching store, so I can go, like, cast a spell to fix this, like...
Yeah.
It seems a little silly, just in the way it kind of comes out, but I...
But it seems silly from our perspective.
Yeah.
However, like, I think we can safely say that religion is, like, severely... Religion and religious people are declining, like, with... You know, as time goes on,
right?
With new generation. And I will say that, like, in other generations, time periods, it was more common to believe these things, actively take part in church, actively be part of a religion, and also to go to a church person.
Yeah, if you couldn't, I guess, if you couldn't explain anything, you can go to a church person. It was kind of like old-timey therapy.
Yeah, just because, like, I'm no expert. We weren't alive during this time. I'm not saying that. But what I will say...
Yeah, maybe there's more to that statement than our modern eye, so to say.
Yeah, it's not how we would handle it. But also, I don't know, they're in, like, a small community. Like, maybe that was normal for the community.
Yeah, possibly.
Maybe they were heavily in a heavily religious area.
It's true. I mean, it's still the UK at this time, too.
Yeah.
So... So now we're getting to the Warrens, and they have all the creepy shadows. This is the painting scene that we were talking about.
Yes.
There are shadows, Lorraine's kind of looking around, and the nun is here, the nun.
The nun! She makes a reappearance.
Yeah. Now, I personally like the score in this part.
Me too.
It was not distracting. It was definitely anxiety-inducing. It kind of gave that. I'll see if we can find a clip here, and maybe we can get it inserted here.
Thank you. I've already said it, but I really like this scene from just from like a Hollywood effects perspective.
It doesn't really do anything to the story. It's just a creepy scene.
But it's a good creepy scene, and it's not too cheesy. I like it.
Yeah.
You see her, but you don't see too much. And essentially, for people who don't know, or if you do know, it's so the painting of the nun is in the room.
It's in one of their studies or office spaces.
Yeah, and you can see that the real hands of the nun are, like, coming out from around the picture frames. Yeah. And I really like that. So then it makes it look like the nun is actually physically standing there, even though it's just a picture. And then it kind of, like,
almost bursts through with the painting. But, like, the painting's the only thing kind of going at her.
But then in actual fact, it's just the painting that's coming at her. It's a good scene. I like it.
And and the score kind of cuts out at the right time. Yeah. It gives you a decent jump scare. It's pretty good.
It's not real at all. Nothing like that had ever happened to the real Lorraine. But it's a great scene.
It's good. And it just is a little added, like, getting you going.
Yeah.
I don't mind this in this part, but I don't necessarily love the through line to kind of just add this or add it for the through line, but it's good. They did a good job with this one. So now we're back in the UK, and now what's happened is essentially word has gotten out with the cops being involved and them going to the church trying to figure out what's going on, that now a TV station is interested in getting their story. I think the family also hooked up with that other paranormal investigator.
Yes.
I have to find his name somewhere. But they hooked up with another paranormal investigator that basically is like, we're going to televise this and show people that it is real.
Mm-hmm.
And that, realistically, that was kind of the whole point of this Enfield case, was to try to capture on film proof of the paranormal. So now the TV station gets involved and we have what has kind of been dubbed the famous interview.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of the recording and TV recording that has been, you could argue, debunked or pulled apart so many times, and it's supposed to be Janet's possession.
Yes.
So we are talking with the family. They're talking about what's been going on, how Janet's kind of been talking to people, and they are basically trying to get Janet to become possessed and see what's going to happen. And apparently, according to the TV show, or what people think, she does.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that her name is Bill. So they're basically trying to get Janet to show that she's possessed, and this is where we learn about Bill Wilkins. They'll learn about that weird coincidence we would mention. This is it.
Yeah.
So we'll get into it a bit later, but it's been argued that during this interview, maybe we can find the scene from the movie here. We'll insert it for you guys, and hopefully maybe we can even get the real one for you, and you can kind of either hear the difference and see what you think.
Mm-hmm.
Janet, are you all right? Janet? Janet? Janet, are you feeling all right?
Stop calling me Janet.
Isn't that your name?
Janet. Sleep. And I'm talking.
Well, what should I call you?
What is your name?
You don't belong here.
My name is Maurice Gross. Who are you?
This is my home. Get out now.
No, this is not your house. Now, what's your name?
Knock, knock.
Very well. Who's there?
Bill.
Let me hear you say
Bill
my name.
Who?
Come on, let me hear you say my name. That's not my name.
I'm going to sleep.
Come on, my name's Morris. Let me hear you say it.
Morris.
Right, that's good. Come on, Adam. Shut up that door. I'm 72 years old. I come from doing right, great God. And I have right near the church where Rena lives. And all my friends come from there as well. And we all make okay. And go.
So what's been argued about these recordings is that Janet has faked the voice, that it's not real,
yep.
She's just kind of imitating it. There are some people that argue, like, yes, even for a teenage, like, woman at this time,
mm-hmm.
it would be possible for these effects. Some people argue that, yes, it is possible that she could do it, and some people are like, no, that's too hard to do. It's so hard with the quality of the recording, unfortunately.
Yep.
But yep. The general consensus is that it has been deemed faked, that it would be possible for someone to recreate that voice with a little bit of talent and training.
Yeah.
Creepy nonetheless.
Yeah.
And this is where things get a little bit weird with the coincidences. So in one of the arguments that they made, so the other investigator, his name is Maurice Gross.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of the guy that was spearheading this investigation really the whole time. The Warrens kind of just dropped in. I know the movie makes it seem the other way, but mm-hmm. he kind of did the whole thing and the Warrens just kind of showed up.
Yep.
But Bill Wilkins, which is the person they found out, used to live in that exact flat.
Yep.
And was actually one of the previous owners who left that couch.
Yes.
This is the weird coincidence.
Chair.
The chair. Sorry. Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
And another coincidence, he actually died.
In the chair.
In the chair. Now, again, I'm not the first person to say, like, yes, 100% believe in ghosts. But
no. When
odd coincidences line up, I can't help but wonder.
It's
a happy coincidence?
It's an interesting coincidence. I think we can at least leave it at that.
Now, people have argued that because all those records are public, did the family look into the past
right. And
just be like, oh, this is his name. We learn up. We can find
yes.
this on the on the internet. They didn't have internet then. On the library. You know, the paper internet.
Yeah, the paper internet.
And can find these records and basically come up with the story themselves.
Right.
Either way,
yeah,
you could look at it both ways, being like, is it coincidental that, do you believe them that this just is something that had happened and it's a strange set of coincidences, or did they knowingly find out the story and make it into their story?
Right.
We'll never know.
Yeah.
Now, it's hard to say what I believe, but I find it very coincidental.
Yeah, I do find it coincidental as well.
So now we get sent off the recordings. They do mention very briefly that there's a family that they work with in the United States that they want to send these recordings off to.
Yeah. This didn't happen, though.
This didn't happen. So what actually happened was the production had aired. The Warrens found out about it, and they hopped on a plane and went to London.
Yep.
To try to figure out if they can get involved.
Yep.
Now, people argue that the Warrens just wanted to make money off of it, that
mm-hmm.
they just wanted to profit off of a famous case to have their name tied to it.
Yeah.
Possible.
Having said that, they didn't actually take any money for any services rendered.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Leave that.
Yeah. Insert your opinions here. But
mm-hmm.
I think that similarly to what we said before, I think they were so caught up in their paranormal investigation that something that, you know, if it looked like a duck but they didn't want to ask the questions about why it was barking,
yeah,
it must be a duck.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where they kind of got the information they wanted about it being paranormal, and I think they almost fell for the idea of, like, yes, we're good people, we need to help these people.
Right.
I think they got in their mind that way.
Yep.
I don't think it was as, you know, cynical as some other people say. There are accounts out there that people think that they claim that Ed Warren said that they'd make a lot of money off of this.
Yeah.
At least not as far as we can tell by the books.
Yeah, I can't really see that. And the other thing is that the family in question, the Hodgsons, like the real-life Hodgsons, didn't actually have anything negative to say about the Warrens
in
this case.
No, they just said that they were there and they helped. And then they left.
They were witness to a few interesting events, and that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was nothing really that damning about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Warrens' involvement is grossly overestimated.
Yeah, in the movie they kind of portrayed as the Warrens kind of came in and saved the day, so mm-hmm. to say. Where really the whole experience, from what I can remember...
Oh my god, it lasts almost 2 years.
It's almost 2 years, and they were only there for 4 months.
Yeah.
I think they were there just for the summertime.
Yeah.
So, read into it what you'd like there, but the way it's portrayed in the movie did not happen. Yeah. So... getting into some other stuff, we are now... the family's now living at the neighbor's house.
Yeah.
And shit's following them. As, you know, ghosts do.
Yeah.
This is a good scene. I do like this one. They have, like, a bell for the dog in the house. And it kind of tricks the younger kid to open the door. And it's... the crooked man is now haunting him. I do like the scene that they have where it actually just turns out to be Janet.
Yeah, I like
I do like the little twist there where you're just like, just kidding, it's not the crooked man. Janet's just super possessed.
Yes.
And... according to them, again, these are things that they believed had happened.
Yeah.
They thought, like, Janet was walking around. She was kind of targeting and saying things to people. Again, is this sleepwalking?
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. Entirely possible.
So, at this point, the Warrens get involved. We cut back, and the church had contacted them in the movie.
Yes.
Saying, here's a recording. What do you think of this? And, like, now what if I told you if this was, like, a 12-year-old girl?
Yeah.
So...
even apparently the Warrens were, like... it may be real, and it may not be real.
Yeah.
What I do like about it is that it does show you that Lorraine Warren had doubts about this particular case. They later go on to say that the reason that she thinks that she had doubts about it was because the actual, like, demon was, like, clouding her judgment and clouding her mind.
Yeah, there was, like, another spirit that was clouding what was happening. They kind of touch on that in the movie, too.
Yeah, but they actually do go into it that they were, like, apparently even the Warrens had doubts about this particular case when they initially looked at it.
Yeah, and I do like they kind of kept that in the movie. So the movie, the church tells them that they need to go and kind of figure out if the church can get involved. Basically, they don't. Classic church, no attempt on throwing the Catholic Church under the bus, but essentially they're kind of like, well, we don't want to get our hands dirty, and people are already not a fan of you, so can you go, and that way if it's a shit show, it's on you and not the church?
Yeah.
I kind of do like that they're kind of playing, you know, politics here.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure to an extent that probably did happen. Mm-hmm. I don't think it happened in this case. The Warrens just kind of, again, they just showed up on their
themselves,
own. But I do kind of like that idea of the church can't get involved with everything. We already have our own issues going on.
Yeah. I could see that happening.
So, but I do like that that's kind of how they portrayed it. So now we go and have like our little heart-to-heart scene as to them, you know, prepping to leave. Now, the one thing I do like about this scene is I like that they touch on some of their home elements where the daughter, Judy, is... like, oh, you're going away again. Mm-hmm. Is it that important? The grandmother's living in. Like, they kind of talk about how long they're away from home. I do like that because that is a legitimate thing that was stressful for them.
Yep.
There's also a whole other side topic. Check out our Warrens podcast if you haven't already about the weird
home life
with someone that was apparently in an adulterous relationship with Ed. Oh, it's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
We talk about it in depth. So, take a look at that if you're interested in that.
That has yet to be substantiated, but it's an interesting
thing to bring up, yeah. So, they basically kind of talk about, we need to search and find out what's going on. A bit of God overtones here. Not biggest fan of it. Sorry, that's just our neighbors. They don't understand that we record a podcast. Also, they do this at like 5 in the morning from like 2 to 5. So... welcome to our lives.
And also, where are they going? Where are they going right now? Nothing is open.
Really important delivery. Anyways. They kind of rehash their scene now. Getting back to the movie. It's a great segue. Getting back to the movie, they kind of rehash their scenes about, like, I've seen your death. The God put us together. Blah, 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 blah. We're doing it.
Yep, they have, like, a little rehash about that.
Yep. It's and now the Warrens arrive. And Lorraine's like, fuck. It's haunted. Rooms are locked. They have a couple crosses in that room. So many crosses in the room. Again, I don't know if I don't think there's any pictures of it, but the movie kind of has like...
no, apparently that was a thing.
That was a thing?
Yeah,
okay.
There were real pictures of that. There were a silly amount of crosses.
Like, at least a couple hundred.
Yes.
In that room. Now, like, so and again, many. This is the thing that I find interesting, is they were that concerned about everything that was happening that they had... padlocked the door shut to the radiator. Because according to them, If they didn't, doors would be banging all night, yep. and there'd be so much shit going on in that room.
Yep.
Again, biggest scheme ever, or is this someone, like, something unexplainable that we can't talk, like, right? we don't know about? We won't know.
One of the really, I guess more notable things that had happened was, Janet getting pulled into the room and the door was locked from the outside.
Yeah.
That is one of that the happened, things yeah. that apparently had happened and it was witnessed to have happened.
Yeah, and that's actually what the next scene is here.
Yeah.
So when the Warrens arrive, Lorraine talks to Janet. And I think, to an extent, the Warrens were almost kind of like a glorified, like, therapy stay-in family. I think, to an extent, that they... Did they really solve and fix paranormal things that may or may not have existed?
No.
Can't definitively say that, but did they act as good comfort for families?
Yeah.
To an extent, yes. For some families, yes. For some families, no.
Yeah. They probably tried to provide comfort, and I think that was about it.
Yeah. So Lorraine talks to Janet and kind of is like, oh, I understand what you're going through. I had struggles in school, too, and mm-hmm. I found someone that finally accepted me, and it's Ed, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he's really cute romance.
Kidsy scene.
Yeah. So later that night, they kind of talk, the Warrens, both Ed and Lorraine, are kind of talking in bed about what they're talking about, like when, what their initial thoughts are. Mm-hmm. They learn about the chair. They learn about the Janet's possessor and the voices. And essentially, we learn that through Janet, through the chat that she has with Lorraine, that the spirit wants to hurt everyone, hurt them.
Yes.
Essentially the Warrens. So now, this is where we do the first weird test.
Mm.
This is one of the ones where I'm like, even for the Warrens, I'm like, really? You thought this was a legit test?
Yeah.
So, they do a better job of making it seem legit in the movie, but you know very well that this is probably yeah. not legit. I don't know yeah. if I buy this one 100%. So, they were trying to see if they could get Janet to be possessed and have this voice-throwing thing happen with water in her mouth. Because apparently that was the only way you could tell if you were possessed
right.
in the 70s. So they did an audio recording, and Janet would hold water in her mouth, and they would kind of ask the spirit question, seeing for a reply. And they had multiple people in the room, and Janet would claim that the spirit would only talk if no one was looking.
Yeah.
So everyone had to turn around, and she would, you know, put the water in her mouth, and she would talk.
Mm-hmm.
Now everyone's argued she would have plenty of time to swallow the water, take another sip before anyone turned back around. Mm-hmm. No one ever disputes that. I find it odd, again, there it's like, you're on an audio recording and people still want you to turn around.
Right.
I'm not buying this one.
Mm-mm.
This one's just a weird one, and this one has kind of been the worst test that they've had.
Yeah, I don't like this one. I think, I mean, if let's say it was true, the thing doesn't want you, I don't know, it doesn't want anybody looking at you when it possesses you or something. I don't know why that's a weird rule, but let's just go out on a limb and say it was.
Yeah.
Couldn't you then set something up, a video camera, something, to be able to catch this,
yeah.
right?
This is almost why I like the stuff in The Conjuring a bit better, because they just used, like, flash photography. Now, yeah. again, getting into The Conjuring, there are some other reports saying that they didn't set up the exposure properly. There's other random technical elements they say they missed, kind of leading to
yeah.
the issues they had with the photography.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into that in maybe a whole other episode, but essentially that's kind of the same thing here. It's like, well, why didn't we just use, like, more simple technology or things that are just more reliable?
Yeah.
I don't know. A weird water in the mouth test while throwing your voice while no one watches you, and then we turn around and you still somehow have water in your mouth because you were turned around. You couldn't have seen them take another sip of water.
Right. I didn't
there's
like
too
that.
Many holes there. But they did try their best in the scene to try to make it yeah. seem as creepy and realistic as possible. Like, mm-hmm. oh, this definitely proved that it was happening.
Yeah.
Not buying it. So, the weird thing here, and this is kind of where the original cases with, or the original reports with Lorena come in, she hasn't been sensing anything.
Yeah.
She's kind of been like, yeah, I don't disagree that they're suffering, and we can definitely see things are going on, and there's weird things happening, but she's not feeling anything in terms of, like,
She's not getting her usual visions.
Usual visions or any, mm-hmm. like, shadows or anything. And this is where, again, Jan's tying herself to the bed. Because, you know, she's either been sleepwalking or is possessed. One of the two. It's only, those are your two options. You're either sleepwalking normally or you're possessed.
Right.
So if you sleepwalk, you may be possessed. Just keep that in mind. So now we're on nighttime, like, 38. I don't know. We're, like, 3-7 something.
Something.
And this is a cool scene. I like this one with Janet kind of falling through the ceiling.
I like that, too.
Yeah, so she's sleepwalking, and she is kind of possessed or dreaming, and she is kind of melting through the floor, and she's, like, on the ceiling, and she gets thrown up through the ceiling onto the floor back into the bedroom, and she's no longer tied to the bed.
Yeah, it's really good.
Now, I don't care if that's real, not real, whether she's sleepwalking or not sleepwalking. That'd be creepy to experience, whether it was, quote, real as paranormal or real as in you visioned it sleepwalking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel for anyone that has, like, weird night terrors like that or sleep paralysis. Exactly. Like, things like that can be really terrifying.
I can at least sympathize with that. I have a pretty active, unfortunately, pretty active nightmares.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, that is really scary to go through.
Yeah, thankfully, I don't remember most of my dreams, and they're not very vivid. Yours are, like, the opposite. You see,
I could, like, spin you a story as if I was watched a movie.
We always talk about our dreams, and I'm like, yeah, I meant, like, someone with a sword, and then I woke up.
You had the one where I ate a snake?
Yeah, you ate a snake, and that's all I can remember of the dream. I was asleep for hours. That's all I remember. Like, whereas Ginger's yeah, I took a nap, and, like, I had a dream where, like, we went to Morocco, and, like, you ate sand, and then Steph was there, and then we brought George, and we were eating very specific pizza. Like, I kid you not, that's probably a dream you had. Yeah. I just made that up.
Yeah, right.
But that's how many details there are. And it's like, you were asleep for 30 minutes. How did all that happen?
Yeah.
It's like Inception. But this scene is really good. I think they did a really good job on the effects. They really kind of, you know,
they stepped it up, I think, the effects for this movie, for sure.
And I think it kind of one-upped Annabelle for sure.
Yeah.
So this is the scene that we were talking about before where Janet now gets locked in the room.
Mm-hmm.
She essentially ends up in the room that she's not supposed to be in, and the door locks from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's kind of screaming, everyone's panicking, and they are trying to help her get out. Mm-hmm. So that's fine. They do eventually get her out, and the Warrens are like, shit, what we gonna do? And I do like, the thing I do appreciate about this movie as well is they do bring in both sides. They do at least acknowledge the fact that people were skeptical of them.
Yep.
That they had these conversations, and they put that in the movie. Because it's not like, you know, Annabelle, where it's like, hauntings happened, and it's really bad, and it's scary, and the movie's done.
Yeah. And I like that there were things that, like, there were things that the kids did, like Janet did, that they lied about. Even to this day, they said that they bent the truth.
Yeah, or they tried to fabricate certain things. Now, oddly enough, in their reports, they actually tried to, according to them, they tried to fabricate certain things to see if they would be found.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently every time they fabricated something or lied about it, the investigators found out that wasn't true.
Yeah.
Now, the extent of what was published that they said was fabricated has never been known.
Yeah.
So that's the big issue, too, is it's like, they've never really said if anything that's been released was fabricated.
The original investigators said that the bending of the spoons was fabricated.
Yeah.
And that one that they had caught them pretty much red-handed in.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a few other little incidents that the original investigators had figured out that were not real.
Yeah.
The great debate is the picture where Janet is levitating.
Quote levitating, yeah.
Quote levitating. The problem is that the angle at which the picture is taken, you could be like...
Well, and there are like a series of three photos that were all kind of taken as it was, quote, as it was happening.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when you kind of put them side by side, almost like a movie, it kind of gives the illusion that she jumped off the bed.
Yeah.
Made a pose in midair, and then landed.
Yes. Now, I don't know.
Again, we weren't there. We didn't see this.
Yeah.
The investigators thought it was real. The family still thinks that it was real.
Yep.
It looks a little suspicious based off of, like, the four photos that we have.
Yeah. To me, it looks suspicious for the reason that other people have pointed out. The way that her knees are bent, I think that, like...
Well, and the height that she achieves is no different from if you jumped off a bed as a kid.
Right. I think it is certainly achievable from a jump.
Yeah.
Off of a bed. Yeah.
So that's kind of the weird thing. And mm-hmm. we'll get into our thoughts on the controversy. Because now we're actually at the pub.
Yeah.
They're at a British pub, and there's a social worker, mm-hmm. a psychologist, I think. Or I don't know if she's, yeah. And she's basically like...
Very skeptical.
Very skeptical. Being like, this mother is on... So it's an interesting tie-in, because this is really what happened. The family was applying for a certain type of social assistance, and they were trying to get their application pushed through.
Yeah, for better housing.
For better housing. And they found it oddly coincidental that just after they submitted the application, all this crazy shit was happening.
Yeah.
And now they're on TV kind of showing how crappy their home is and how crazy their home situation is. And so they had kind of put in a recommendation to deny them their housing.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that they have... in their minds, extorted their kids to try to get better housing.
Yeah.
That was one of the angles they were working about being skeptical about it. And according to them, there was nothing, there was no evidence. They saw the pictures and were like, no, that's just someone jumping off the bed. Mm-hmm. They saw the TV interview being like, yeah, someone was just throwing their voice. And yeah. again, the water test is like, oh, you want me to believe a recording of someone that apparently had water in their mouth where no one actually saw it happening?
Exactly.
No.
Yeah.
And I agree with that in terms of like, government liability, and we know how much the Brits love their governmental bureaucracy.
Yes.
That wasn't going to fly. So, and I do like they kept this scene in there, because it pointed out some of the things that probably the Warrens and other paranormal investigators experience even to this day, of people discrediting them, or people, you know, having no other explanation for something, and this is what they're relying on
yeah.
to try to fill an answer, and that's not working. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's necessarily right, and I'm not here to say that, you know, weird things can't happen, because we've had our own share of, you know...
weird things.
Unexplainable things.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to immediately jump to that.
No.
Now, I do like that they kind of kept the Warrens in there, and even Lorraine's kind of like... she's even almost siding with them, being like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to believe them, but at the same time...
I don't
know. What proof do we have?
Yep.
And I like that, because it... is real and true to the story. Again, yeah. I kind of like the movie for it being mostly true to events.
Yes.
So now we're back at the home, and this is where they're kind of doing their really nice Warrens helping them type of thing.
Yeah.
And singing the song because they're Elvis fans. They're yeah. Elvis fans, and their record player is broken. Mm-hmm. So he starts playing guitar. It's kind of a nice scene. And now we get, you know, pep talks with Ed, mm-hmm. where he kind of just, you know, gives some little life lessons and things like that. It's kind of a nice little heartwarming scene.
Yep.
So now we have we have Lorraine outside, and she's chatting with the psychiatrist, social worker person. Mm-hmm. And now Ed is doing the creepy basement water thing, because yep.
the water
flooded in the
yeah, the basement room. Had flooded, yeah.
Now... I know what they're trying to do here. This didn't really happen, but they're trying to tie it into one of Lorraine's visions at the beginning of the movie with yes. Ed dying
in the basement.
It's not really getting it. They have a good jump scare, though, there.
Yeah, they
it's
do.
Good. It's a
yeah,
really good one.
I like it.
But other than that, I don't really see the point of that scene.
It did not happen in real life. It's good Hollywood magic, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Lorraine's kind of talking with the doctor, psychiatrist person, basically like, we need something, or there's nothing we can do to help. Mm-hmm. And they kind of need to go through proper channels.
And then there's kind of a bigger event that takes place. And this is the one where, like, the kids get trapped in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And all kinds of, like, furniture is going everywhere and...
Yeah, that's right after the scene.
Yeah.
So they kind of fast forward a little bit. Now we're at Christmas time. And Janet's still seeing shit. They're kind of upset that they're not able to do anything. But... now there's, like, Johnny, one of the younger siblings, sees knives on the table, and Janet, like, left the room at this point. Mm-hmm. And this is where kind of shit hits the fan. This is where they have the bent spoon references, because essentially they kind of walk into the kitchen after this, and the whole tables are flipped. There's knives everywhere. There's, like, 1,000 bent spoons.
There's broken plates, yeah. And everything is everywhere.
And you're thinking, oh, man, shit's hit the fan.
Yeah.
And... the psychiatrist kind of calls, once things have calmed down after the scene, they find Janet in, like, an electrical cupboard or some.
Yeah, in an electrical cupboard, for sure.
Yeah, this was a real thing. She actually did end up getting in weird spaces. Mm-hmm. And the psychiatrist person comes by and is like, she faked the whole thing. And they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And they do have a video of Janet bending the spoon, slipping the table.
Yep.
All these things. Now, this is where we start to spin the movie magic.
Yes.
So, in the movie's terms, this has happened because Janet said that, is claiming that the demon wanted to prove that it was fake to get the Warrens out. Or else they would kill everyone.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing that they're going for.
So here. She trashes the room.
Knowing that it was on camera. But we don't know this yet because everyone, the Warrens leave. Everyone's pissed. The family's like, you're not going to help us, then fucking get out.
Yeah.
And unfortunately with the Warrens, that kind of happened more often than not to them.
Yeah.
They weren't helping, or they weren't helping to the extent the family wanted them to, so they got kicked out. That happened in The Conjuring, too. Technically, they were there for a while, and they just said, fuck off.
You're making it worse.
You're making it worse. Leave. So that's what they did. They're going on, and basically what had happened is, in real life, the Warrens had their stint, and then they left. They didn't really solve anything.
Yep.
But in this case, they got kicked out, and Lorraine, as they're on the train to get to whatever airport, probably Heathrow, I don't know. Stupid trains in London, so expensive. Yeah. But they're going back, and Lorraine's kind of piecing everything together now. I do like, in terms of a movie ending, it's a nice, like, it kind of catches you off guard, because you're like, okay, maybe it's just ending. They're just going to say that this is the way the story ended.
Yeah.
They do a nice little Hollywood thing where they kind of piece together the bits of information they have. They realize what's going on. So in this case, they play back some tapes and recordings that they had, and they were alternating between two tapes.
And it was revealing
more. It was revealing, basically saying that Bill Wilkins was being controlled by this devil who's now Valak.
Yeah.
And they now have information saying, help me, I can't get out.
Yeah.
And there was a, now that they've kind of cracked the code, Lorraine has this big vision about how to defeat this demon and what's been going on.
Yeah.
A little Hollywood for me. That didn't happen. But I like that they kind of tied it in. It's not, like, it's a nice kind of wrap up to the ending. Okay, bear in there, guys. We're almost at the end here, and we'll give you kind of our final thoughts. So, very quickly, the Warrens rush back. We realize that the only way to defeat the demon is to have power over it with its name.
Yes.
This is where that other scenes earlier come in handy, because she, while she was dealing with that terror painting scene,
she has to remember that she actually knows the demon's name.
She inadvertently, like, wrote it in her Bible, like, scratched out all these pages. So, they go back. She realizes the name's Valak. Ed and Lorraine get separated. You're like, oh my god, it's an action film, because Ed might die, even though you know he's in other movies, so it's fine.
So you're like, he doesn't die, but
die, but I'm worried for him.
Yeah.
And basically from this point onward, it is full fiction.
Yes.
This didn't happen. There was no big tornado scene where Valak is, like, suspending Janet.
No.
There's no other things going on in there where she's now, like, about to fall out the window onto a death tree spike.
Yeah, no, no.
A little dramatic for my liking, but they do a really good job.
Yeah.
The ramp up is good, and I, even though it is kind of out of this world Hollywood.
Yes.
I'm not mad at it.
No, it's okay for what it is.
Yeah. So essentially the way they defeat Valak is they have its name, Lorraine kind of condemns it back to hell.
Yep.
And they get the family kind of back to their own scenario. Ed kind of, you know, heroically saves Janet from falling out the window.
Yep.
And everything is somewhat back to normal.
Yes.
And they talk to Maurice Gross, and they're trying to, you know, get more information. And the Warrens are just like, sometimes this is just the way it has to be.
Yep.
And that's kind of where they leave the movie. Lorraine remembers the name. They save. And, oh, they bring back the Crooked Man item. So the one thing I like about here is they do end all the Conjuring movies with an item being brought back to their at-home museum, which is still a thing that one of the stepsons or something owns it now.
Yeah. Now, the part that I really like is the true factoid that they added in the end of the movie.
Yes.
So
In The Conjuring and in this Conjuring 2 movie, I like how they add the, like, real pictures, the real facts, and things that had happened.
So not just the real pictures and the real facts, but what I like is that they tell you what happened to the mother. So Peggy Hodgson actually ends up living in this house for the rest of her days.
Yep.
She ended up living there literally into the 2000s.
Until she died. Now, again, another weird coincidence.
Now, whether this is coincidence or not, I'm sure it is coincidence, but it's really weird that it happened. The real Peggy Hodgson died in that chair that Bill Wilkins also died in.
Yep. Again, this might be a series of happy coincidences, yep. and there is, you know, no causation for that.
Yeah.
Again, correlation doesn't equal causation.
No, it does not.
But it's interesting nonetheless.
Cool coincidence.
And they briefly list some of the facts that had happened in terms of the TV reviews, what people thought about it, and they also show you some of the original pictures that they had of yeah. the Hodgson family.
Some of the pictures are really cool. Some of them are less compelling, of course, like yeah. the levitating
and thing. They do show you the original tapes. They show you like yeah. the audio recordings of in the movie.
Me personally, I find the audio recordings interesting.
It's weird because they, you could argue that they are faked, but you could also argue that they may not be. Like, it's almost so deep and hoarse that you could be like, could a 13-year-old do that?
Like, yes, I say
like, yes, could. I guess possible.
Yeah, in that anyone could do anything, yeah. I do find that one, though, less open and shut, if yeah. that makes sense. Yep. It doesn't sound like her at no. all. It doesn't sound like a little girl, like, not even in the slightest.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, I find the recordings kind of interesting, kind of creepy.
Yeah, I find them creepy, mm-hmm. both of them, and even some of the pictures are.
Yeah, they're interesting.
Yeah, and I do like how they kind of comment on that as well. So, overall, I think they did a really good job on telling the real facts of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I do like that of the movie, similar to the original Conjuring movie. And I do like that they also have really good effects for when it's important. Not a huge fan of the fake ending, but I think in terms of what was presented and how they did it, it was really good. Score I really like. And again, it's got a bigger budget. I don't actually hate the actual way the movie looks. They really were able to do everything properly, ADR technique and yeah. all that.
It from a technical like movie standpoint, it was good.
Yeah.
It was better than the other ones. It's certainly an improvement.
Yeah. And
it offers good scares too. Like it's
yeah, they do have the good jump scares. Like it's not just, you know, documentary style. Like it is yeah. still very much a movie.
Yeah.
So I do appreciate that where they're kind of making, yes, it's Hollywood, but they're basing it at least in an ounce of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And especially where these cases are so interesting and so debatable. And I know people could argue that they're not debatable, that they're just 100% fake. But
mm-hmm.
even for me, as we mentioned before, the idea of things not being 100% the way you think it is, but also not what other people think it is either. Like,
yeah.
just because someone says it isn't normal doesn't automatically mean it is paranormal.
No.
But those events still took place to some extent.
Yeah.
And I find that's kind of creepy.
Me too, yeah.
So, yeah. Getting into our score time. All right. So, time for our scores. This is the part of our review where we give up to 20 points per category for an overall score out of 100.
Mm-hmm.
So, the categories, are, if you know already, that we're going to be judging on are going to be the overall story,
yep.
the acting, yep. any visual effects, music and sound effects, and the movie ending and satisfaction rate.
I have a feeling like we're probably going to land somewhere very similar on this one.
I think we're
going
to be pretty close. I'm going to let you go first. Now, don't throw me out of the bus here. I'm the one that has to drive the bus now. Update, I'm a school bus driver. Thanks, COVID.
I landed at about an 85 for this one.
Yeah, I actually landed at an 83.
Oh. You just had to be slightly different, huh?
I did.
Okay.
I did quick math. I brought it down a little bit on the storyline.
That's fair. Yep.
That's the only thing that I brought it down for, but basically everything across the board was pretty much there. I think that the acting is great. They got, even the children actors did a really good job.
Yeah, they were good.
The score is great.
Yeah.
I don't have any complaints about the score. This is one of the ones where they did a really nice mix of atmospheric
yeah.
with traditional sounds and a little bit of electronic music. And yep. it's great to give you kind of that more soundscape type of thing. They mm-hmm. didn't over push it, which is great. And I found just overall the visual effects were great. There were really no issues aside from just the storyline.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's more based on the true story. It could be closer to it. I wish it had been.
But it does leave, like, I don't feel dissatisfied with the movie.
No, anyway. Annabelle I felt dissatisfied with. Yeah. yeah.
So that's what I do like about that one. Other than that, I mean, we could have a whole other podcast about the other issues we have with the real story and the fake story, but
yeah.
I think we gave you guys enough information yeah. there, but and it's definitely worth a watch. Like,
yeah.
Even if you again,
my overall takeaway is, like, do I think it's worth watch? Yeah, I think this one. I think Conjuring 1 and Conjuring 2
definitely worth the watch for the universe.
I think Annabelle is...
You can skip that one.
If you're really dead set on seeing the whole series, okay, fine, fine.
But if you just want to watch creepy movies that are kind of like, this kind of happened.
Yeah.
At least to some extent.
I think Conjuring 1, Conjuring 2, I think they're really good, you know, for your horror fans that really want to see it. Annabelle, I almost think I would, like, be like, don't even bother.
Yeah, don't bother.
Now, the next one we're going to get into.
We're
going
to jump ahead. So, we're going to continue with the Conjuring universe. Shocking.
We know. So, the next one we're going to get into is going to be Annabelle Creation.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that, like, for me, this is... Maybe I'm misremembering it. We'll have to, like, you know, we always do a rewatch kind of thing.
Yeah.
But for me, it was... I liked this movie when I first saw it.
I would like to do more research on it.
Yes.
Because I would like to see how true it is to anything.
Yeah, and
so
I don't know
we
if
won't spoil anything with the movie, yeah. But it is kind of like a precursor. Again, hence the title, Annabelle Creation. It kind of tells the backstory of Annabelle.
Yes.
So
now, maybe it's not real at all. Maybe this is entirely just like fake movie magic. They're giving Annabelle a backstory. And in which case, I'll say, okay, fine. Like, maybe it's not one of the things that's actually... tied to anything.
Yep.
I think this is another one where technically Ed and Lorraine Warren aren't in the story, if I'm not mistaken.
Only at the very end, kind of like right. Some of the other movies.
To talk about like their through line kind of thing. Yeah. So, but just from like a movie perspective, yeah, I liked it. I remember liking it.
Yeah.
So we'll have to kind of like dive into that. Now, a really quick aside... We just wanted to really briefly talk about
this new movie. It's a new movie and also kind of an old movie that you haven't seen, but it's a very similar type of movie.
Yes.
So the new movie that we saw, which is it's a Netflix original, I'm pretty sure, isn't it? No,
it's a Shudder original.
Shudder, that's what it is.
And it's called Host.
Yeah.
So this was recommended to me by a couple of friends of mine. And we finally got around to watching it. It came out in 2020.
We should do a formal review on it. But
we are going to do a formal review on it.
But we are going to give you our kind of initial thoughts, initial viewing recommendation thoughts on it.
Yeah. And I'm going to say it right now. Watch it.
Yeah, it's good. It's Paranormal Activity, but meets kind of like a higher level.
Meets a modern
twist on it. Mm-hmm. And almost has elements to Unfriended, if anyone has seen that movie.
Yeah.
I saw that when that came out. I think that was 2000. 12, 10, around there. And very similar idea, but not as dated. And definitely more modern horror elements than Unfriended. Unfriended was more of like a... You didn't see as much. It was more of a psychological thriller. Mm. Whereas I kind of like as quirky as they're being with it, it is based around Zoom and the pandemic and things like that. So it is very, you know, hashtag relevant.
Yeah.
So, but it is very reminiscent of Unfriended in the idea of you're only seeing it through the eyes of a Zoom call.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was really unique, obviously. Yeah. And yes, very relatable because we're all experiencing those Zoom calls. I thought it was really good. Yeah. I thought they didn't show you, again, it had all the things that we like. It didn't show you too much. It showed you enough that you were scared, but it didn't show you, you know, it wasn't those big Hollywood reveals where you're suddenly staring at a demon and you're like, oh.
No, and they do show you flashes, which is good. Like, they do kind of have full face stuff, but it's very quick, and so you don't really get to see it.
Yeah.
It's not very jump scary, but it is a little psychologically thrillery, a little more haunting-esque than Unfriended.
Yeah.
So.
And, so I'll just say, like, the reason I'm, like, really hyping it up, you know, if people want recommendations, we're going to do a review on it.
Yeah. And we should probably do recommendations as well. Kind of another top list comes
in. Yeah, we're going to do that again soon. But like, I just found that like, oh man, with this whole COVID thing, there have been stinko horror movies.
There's been nothing.
Like just, they have been bad. They have been outright bad. Like the last good movie that came out was...
Antebellum?
I don't even think that was that good. It was all right.
It was okay.
It was just okay. It was hyped up, but unfortunately, it was a big miss for me.
Yeah.
No, it was The Invisible Man.
Oh, yeah. We watched... That was the last movie we saw in an actual theater. Oh, no. We saw...
We saw
Tenet.
Briefly, we saw Tenet in the summer when they briefly had movie theaters open. We went with a friend, which was awesome, by the way. Good movie.
Good movie.
Not horror, but good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're getting sidetracked here, but shout out to Host. Take a look at that if you are into some new horror scares.
Yeah, nice and little modern COVID twist on a horror movie.
Again, you can always check back to our podcast for future episodes if you're sick of not being able to watch any horror movies. We'll probably have some updates for you in terms of recommendations.
I think we're going to focus on... We're certainly going to do, like, continuing our Conjuring series, which is going to be Annabelle Creation. But we might even insert a mini episode with some, maybe some more, like...
Just easy watching recommendations, our tops, our bottoms, again. Yeah. See what you guys like, what you don't
exactly.
like. So, we'll, again, 2 weeks for Annabelle Creation, and we'll catch up with that one next time.
Thanks so much for listening to...
Dark Room Reviews.